It was the early hours of December 8th, 2000, a rainy night in Dublin. Trevor Deely, a young professional, left Buck Whaley's nightclub on Leeson Street after an enjoyable Christmas party. There was a taxi strike in Dublin that night, so he made the short walk to the Bank of Ireland where he worked to get an umbrella. He had a quick chat and a cup of coffee with a colleague who was on the night shift, and he left the building heading for home. Shortly after 4 a.m, Trevor was sighted on grainy CCTV footage on Haddington Road, and from there was never seen again.
He hadn't turned up for work on Friday, which was deemed unusual.
We kind of just figured his alarm clock hadn't gone off or whatever.
Two phone calls were made, weren't getting any answer.
It was after the Christmas party. Honestly, we said we'd let it slide. We'd pick it up with him on the Monday morning.
23 years on from his disappearance, and with multiple lines of inquiry now ruled out, Trevor's family feel that they are back to square one.
It doesn't feel like time does heal, actually. It's every year, I say, certainly, and I know other members of my family, that we just can't go through this again for another year, and yet we've no choice. You just have to. So I think it actually gets harder. It just gets harder every year that you're still stuck in this moment in time.
I'm Kevin Doyle, and today on the Indo Daily, I'm joined by Conor Feehan, news correspondent with the Irish Independent, and by Mark Deely, Trevor's brother, to discuss the family's continued search for answers.
What we'll do is make an appeal in relation to the disappearance of Trevor Deely. Trevor was 22 years of age, Tom County Kildare, and was working in Dublin. And he was last seen at about 4:14 a.m. on Friday, the 8th of December 2000.
Mark, I think for people of my age group, the name Trevor Deely is one that people are very familiar with. His name has been in the papers for more than two decades now. But for those who aren't familiar with the story, will you tell us a little bit about Trevor?
Trevor was 22 years of age, finished his college life, starting out in a bank, Bank of Ireland Asset Management. Typical 22-year-old, just, you know, liked a good time, friendly, good circle of friends, you know, went out for a Christmas party and we haven't seen him since.
Explain that night to me. It was a very standard December the 8th, 2000. I guess it's probably etched in your memory, but what was the context of Trevor heading out that night?
It was a work party night. And so that sort of traditionally kicks off the season of office work parties, and there was a load of different ones on, and they met up earlier in Copperface Jack's actually early in the evening. I think they were there around 6 or 7 in the evening, and they went on then, and they were in various different places and ended up in the Hilton for a while for food and so on at that. Yeah, good night out, you know, busy night out, but there was a taxi strike. It was bad weather at the time. There was just a few things that went against us when we found out he was missing afterwards. Like, you know, it just complicated it for us.
There was nothing in the days leading up to that party that gave you any concern about Trevor's welfare or anything like that?
Nothing in the days, nothing in the hours, nothing in the weeks or months beforehand. Nothing. Trevor was your normal, grounded, but sociable 22-year-old fella. Like, you know, yeah, you know, nothing.
Trevor was one of the happiest guys you could ever meet. He had this big, happy smile in his face. He loved dealing with people.
He was great fun. He was into sport. He was into his new career.
Very easygoing, just relaxed. Nothing would seem to bother him in any shape or form.
He was turning out to be everything you would expect to be.
And so when you discovered that he was missing, I suppose, maybe walk us through, we'll get back into the detail of what happened on the night, but maybe walk us through the point at which you realise something is wrong here. It's not just that he's hung over and hasn't shown up for work.
Well, it was the Thursday night. So the office party was the Thursday night, and the Friday morning, Trevor would have been known to be diligent as such. Trevor didn't show on Friday. They felt that was unusual, but didn't warrant sort of, you know, mad phone calls or anything like that. So Saturday came, Sunday came, Monday then, when he wasn't in on Monday, there definitely was alarm bells about it. They tried to get in touch with him, they couldn't. They got in touch with my mum down at home in Naas. I'm based over in Castlebar. She rang me then. So by lunchtime Monday, we just knew, like, it's mad. It's a weird sense goes through your head. It was a surreal phone call to get. And that's when things just kick in then, you know. So Monday lunchtime, you like, I'm heading east from west. Everything, the next days and weeks turn into a blur then, really, like, because you're constantly on the go.
And this was the year 2000, so it seems in many ways a long time ago. I'm sure it seems like many lifetimes ago, perhaps, for you. But we had mobile phones, communications. It's not the dark ages here. We're talking about the 80s. So, like, presumably, Trevor had a mobile phone. You all tried ringing that. Tell us about the initial.
Yeah, but even at that, like it is amazing. So, like, 2000 seems like an awful long time ago. We actually don't feel it's that long ago. Mobile phones were definitely common, but smartphones weren't. And there's a world of a difference, you know, between what it was then and so on. Like, things changed dramatically afterwards. The way we had to organise things, the phones helped, but we were still relying on manpower. There was no big social media stuff because there were no smartphones. They were only starting out, like, you know. So it just changed the way things were. It sounds like the dark ages now when I'm thinking about it, but it doesn't actually feel that long ago to us. It's sort of sad and it's poignant, I suppose, a little bit, that.
We need everybody's help to find Trevor, and we can't do this, the guards can't do it, and something happened to him, and unless people are still talking about him and so on, so it's massive comfort, massive. Every development is important in its own right. We need to progress this to a point where it cuts out a massive amount of speculation.
That's a good point. There was no Twitter and Facebook, which I guess if somebody goes missing now is the first place that people go to get their message out. But I know the family have put an awful lot of work and time into trying to figure out the almost minute by minute of that night. So maybe talk us through what you do know about Trevor's movements on the night.
Well, like, really the best thing to say on that is that it's widely available online now. If you just search Trevor Dealey, you'll find the footage there. So we have footage of him during the course of the night, CCTV footage from different venues, from different ATMs, from outside. And whatever's there online is really what we know. We're not hiding anything here with this because there's nothing to hide. We have him outside an ATM at the course where he was in Leeson Street. He'd left the Hilton. They went to a nightclub in Leeson Street. He left the nightclub, went to an ATM, went back to the nightclub. He goes back then and he leaves that and goes into work on his way home. So it's a wild night. It's maybe, I'm not exactly 100% now on times, but it's around 2:15 at night. He goes into work. He spends roughly half an hour, 3/4 hour inside at work talking to the one night shift guy who was there. He says he was sound. He said he knew he'd had a drink, but he wasn't all over the place. Like, you know, he was fine. Like, he was there. He was chatting away, checked in a few work emails, grabbed an umbrella, an ACC Bank umbrella, as it turns out, coming out of Bank of Ireland, walks out. And for years afterwards, this is some of the things that sort of has frustrated us, I suppose, a little bit, in that the technology wasn't there to clean up footage at different stages. But eventually we get it cleaned up and we find he has an interaction with a guy outside the back gates of his workplace, both going in and not really coming out, but small interaction. But, like, it looks so innocent when you see it cleaned up and everything. Everybody can assess this themselves.
We've cleaned up the footage of him walking down Haddington Road, and the footage tended to lend itself towards a little sense of dread about a guy that was walking down behind him. That's been all cleaned up. He's been identified. He's been spoken to. There is nothing sinister there.
We then have him then maybe 10 or 11 minutes later. This is about, again, my times might be wrong now, but about 4:10 in the morning. And he's walking down the old AIB Bank ATM branch, it's Milano's, I think, now, down Haddington Road. And after that, we've no sign of him anywhere.
He did leave a voicemail for a friend saying that the night was finished up and all was good.
Yeah. And that wasn't, like, so he was good buddies with a guy called Glenn. He left that voicemail, you know, like, there was no issues. There was nothing happened during the course of the night. Like, you know, he was in busy spots. You know, it's not as though he was in quiet spots that he could have got himself into bother or something like this. And so even if there had been an interaction with a couple of other lads or anything like that. Like, people would have picked up on this, and you know, whether it was Leeson Street, whether it was the Hilton, whether it was earlier in the evening, you know, but there was nothing. There's nothing at the ATM machines when he's withdrawing money. There's nothing like.
There's three possibilities as I see it when something like this happens without explanation. One is an accident. Two is that the person has decided themselves to disappear. Or three is something more sinister, that they have run foul of somebody else. What was your initial thought process?
Well, we discount the second one because we're adamant, like, as family and friends, that, like, you know, mentally Trevor was perfectly sound. So he wasn't suffering from depression. There were no issues. There were no suicidal thoughts. That has never entered our minds at all. We're 100% sure. But now, I know you can't be 100% sure, but we are 100% sure. His friends are all the same as well. Work colleagues, everybody. So that leaves the other two. Human nature being human nature, it's very easy to say, sure, something has happened to him now. Well, if it did happen, well, what happened to him? I think we still deserve it for his sake. Not for our sake. Sometimes some aspects of the media, they try and focus too much on the family and, you know, what's going on with your parents, what's going on with your siblings, what's going on with your own kids and so on like that. Like, honestly, day-to-day life goes on the whole time. My parents are getting older. I want to know where he is, and I want to know what happened to him. Not for justice, not for anything. I just want to know. I just want to know, like, you know, I think that's fair enough.
It's very difficult. I mean, the whole mystery surrounding his disappearance, and you're wondering about this and wondering about that. And you just can never get away from it, no matter whether I drive down to the country or walk out the town of Naas. It's the same thing. There's always something to remind you of Trevor.
Conor Feehan, can you tell us about how Gardaí treated this investigation in the early stages?
As Mark has said there was a delay between Trevor's disappearance and people realising he was actually missing. There was that gap between the Thursday and the Monday. And so in a sense, Gardaí did have that couple of days that they were kind of working against, but they were straight into what would be the usual kind of investigations in checking with his employers, checking with his family when he was last seen. And in fairness to the Dealey family, Gardaí have praised them for being so proactive in trying to find out what happened to Trevor. And indeed, Mark spent a lot of time when he left Castlebar and came to Dublin searching laneways, searching any back roads, small alleys off main roads that Trevor may have taken on his way home to Balls Bridge, where he was living at the time in shared accommodation. And the postering campaign, as you said, Kevin, like, these days it's all done by social media, but I can still remember everywhere around town back then, all those posters and all the lampposts that were put up by Trevor's family and his friends. But the Gardaí did search some of the canal sections, because obviously Trevor would have had to cross a canal to get home, and he would have had to cross the River Dodder as well. So all those sections of the waterways were searched. But I suppose that the one that's further downstream from the canal is the Grand Canal Basin, which wouldn't have been on Trevor's way home, but then again wasn't too far away. And I think that's one part of the puzzle maybe that could have been investigated or should be investigated, I'm not sure. But it just seems to me that it's a large body of water, but it's impossible to drain it. It's impossible to sort of empty it and have a look. So I suppose there's difficulties there.
Mark, on Connor's point about the Grand Canal Basin, was that ever considered?
Oh, it was searched. It was, yeah, no, in maybe the second week after he was missing, the sub-aqua units were down there. So they really did sort of from Harold's Cross Bridge the whole way down to the Grand Canal Basin. Obviously, and even from Harold's Cross Bridge down as far as the basin, they actually drained it lock to lock. So they didn't just dive it, but they drained each section. Now, as Connor's explained, you can't drain the basin, unfortunately. And there's years and decades of silt built up down there and so on like that. But to the best of their ability at the time, it was searched and they were clear that there was nothing there. It is one of the things, I suppose, one of the things that we're doing at the moment now is we're trying to sort of all the time, well, what can we apply what technologies can we apply now that we didn't have back in 2000? And the basin remains one of the areas that we would like to see. Is there modern techniques, modern way of searching without having to drain it? We're happy it was searched. It's not that it wasn't.
A new investigation was started in 2016, which is 16 years afterwards, which is quite a long time to start going back over things. But it did throw up some new ideas, didn't it?
Yeah, well, like, I don't think it ever sort of... Trevor's case, as the guards call it, Trevor's case never came off the shelves. Like, you know, was never put away. Detective Superintendent Peter O'Boyle, at one stage... he got in touch with us. My dad was very strong at the time that, like, he felt it was sort of stagnating a little bit, and we were pushing for this sort of cold case review, and just sure you're grasping at anything trying to see. Now, whether it was the fact that my dad pushed so hard and a team got put in, but whatever, anyway, a story got told, the story got verified. And so the guards then went and did a dig over in Chapelizod.
Maybe, Conor, you might explain what exactly was going on there in the background.
Yeah, it was after the cold case review was announced, and there was a fair bit of publicity about that at the time, and the CCTV that had been enhanced. But a short time after that, somebody came forward and suggested that Trevor had fallen foul of a criminal gang that he had no knowledge of. He didn't know any of the individuals involved, but possibly was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And it was on the back of information from that source that this search up in Waste Ground in Chapelizod happened. And that took an awful lot of time and resources, clearing a section of around 8 acres, I think. And while there was certain material recovered, like... there was a weapon recovered, there was a gun recovered, and I think a quantity of drugs. But that was it. It was a kind of a dumping ground, I suppose, for some criminals. But there was nothing found that would suggest that Trevor had ever been there.
Mark, that must have been quite traumatic. I know you said it's not about the family, but it is.
Oh, that
I
was
think.
Horrendous. That was horrendous. Yeah, no, it's a little bit like there are a few stark memories that I would have, my sisters would have. One is standing on the banks of the canal, watching the subaqua unit go down, thinking they're going to come up with him now at some stage, or come up with something belonging to him. That'll live with me forever. Like, and yeah, the dig like was, yeah, it was desperate. Like, you know, it's not nice. In a way, what makes it not nice is there's so much attention on it. Like, it was mad. There was, I think, the Dublin Airport Authority got involved at one stage trying to shut drones down around from flying around the place and so on to do with it. And it was just ridiculous. It's just the way things have changed. And yet it gave us a bit of comfort that, well, if there's so much interest, like, we're going to get him. We're going to find him sometime. So, yeah, it was more the sense of dread when you saw the dig happening, you know, is this what's going to happen here now, and so on. And the guards, again, they were very, very good. They asked us, did we want to be there? I said no, but just if you do find him or anything to do with him, just ring me first, like, you know. And they were great, and they were very thorough. Yeah, they spent weeks at it, but again, nothing. Yeah.
On a human level, how do you balance those thoughts? What Connor's described there is the suggestion of a criminal gang involved in drugs and prostitution and stuff, and that Trevor might have somehow stumbled across something that he shouldn't have, perhaps, and fell foul of them, and the hope that you might get answers. Those two things, you know, one of them is hope and the other is absolute despair.
Yeah, but like, we have to be very open-minded here. Like there is an answer somewhere. I think so long as we stay open-minded and we don't get pulled down the way of thinking, well, because he's now, you know, 23 years plus missing, therefore he is dead. And so like, sure, I don't know. Sure, like, maybe he could still walk in the door. Like, as unrealistic as that is, it's still a possibility, because we're not hiding anything here from anybody. So we still need those stories to be told. The good that what gave us super comfort after that whole dig in 2017, it was very comforting to know that the guards will absolutely act on information once they verify the information that they are given. to a degree, we couldn't have asked them to do any more with that. And they're as frustrated. I think professionally, an awful lot of the newer, younger guards that maybe got involved around that time, I think they're very invested in Trevor's case. The older lads are as well. I think lots of people want to solve this, whether it's for personal reasons or just to know. Like,
you know. And while those incidents do give you some focus, we'll say like the searches in the canal and the dig up in Chapel Lizard, it gives you some focus. It's not what you would want to find out, but if you find an answer, well then at least it solves a mystery. But when the dig is discounted, when the canals are discounted, when the person walking down Haddington Road behind him is discounted, it kind of puts you back to square one again, then, doesn't it?
And unfortunately, like as ridiculous as it is, I think it was about a week later that we actually found the footage from the bank of him going down Haddington Road. And that was like a massive leap forward that we had. Well, we've moved him away from his workplace, and we've moved him to Haddington Road. And yet, 23 years later, we haven't moved him anywhere.
Finally, Mark, I suppose, given that there is that element that you're still on Haddington Road, and it's a bit of a cliche in missing persons cases, there is possibly someone out there who knows something, who hasn't said something for all these years or not. But what, I guess, would be your message to anyone who's listening to this in terms of what could help you find the answers at this point?
Oh, no doubt. Like we need people. So the biggest thing, we're not asking anybody to remember where they were back then. I wouldn't. The biggest thing is have a look at the footage online. The one unknown is the guy at the back of his workplace. Whether or not he has anything to do with it, it's just a box that we have to tick ourselves. We'd like to know who that person is. Everybody else who we can see in the footage, the guards know who they are. They've spoken to them. They're satisfied. There's nothing wrong. So that's the only individual at the back of his workplace thing. Not walking down after him. It's not the same person. They're different people. At the back of the back of his workplace, there's a bit of an interaction with Trevor when he's going into work, and a lesser of an interaction when he's going. But again, a totally innocent interaction. It looks completely innocent, but we just want to know who that person is. Apart from that, I don't know. I'd like everybody just. We can't let Trevor just become a name that gets consigned to history, and just he's sitting on a box. He's a case files inside in Pier Street. That just can't happen. So we just have a look at the footage. Somebody definitely knows something. Somebody knows something. I just refuse to believe that somebody can just vanish and nobody knows a thing. Somebody knows something. Whether that is that he's still alive, as ridiculous as that would sound, even as I say it. But we're not discounting anything. And that's the other, I suppose it's the other big thing, one of the things that can differentiate Trevor's case to maybe some of the other missing persons cases. In some cases, they sort of know what has happened, but maybe they just can't find the proof, or they can't find a body, or Trevor's case is an absolute mystery. We genuinely just have no idea.
Well, Mark, we hope someday you will, and before too long, that you will get the answers to some of those questions. Mark Deely, thank you very much, and Conor Feehan, thank you. My thanks to Mark Deely and Conor Feehan. I'm Kevin Doyle, and today's episode of the Indo Daily was produced by Ian Doyle and Dee Reddy, researched by JJ Clark, with sound by Rory Bowens and Gavin Hennessy. Archive clips were from RTE, Virgin Media News and The Irish Independent. If you enjoy the Indo Daily, don't forget to follow and leave us a review.